Moncrief on News Talk.
Time to look at stories from other parts of the world. Jonathan De Burka Butler joins us once again. Afternoon, Jonathan.
Sean, how are you getting on?
Not too bad. Right, we're going to go. Well, I suppose it's to do with Hawaii, but it's really in Washington, D.C. this decision was made. But this is a Supreme Court decision about guns.
Yes. So this is a Supreme Court decision about guns, specifically in Hawaii. But I think it's going to affect a couple of other states as well. New York, California, New Jersey and Maryland as well, right? So effectively in Hawaii in 2023, they brought in what they're calling here a rule, right? Which meant that you weren't allowed to bring concealed weapons into publicly accessible private property, restaurants, shopping malls, that kind of thing. And
okay.
There was a list
yeah.
of them, okay? And immediately when the rule came out, it was challenged, right? There was three state residents and then the Hawaii Firearms Coalition got involved and they took a case, right? They challenged the rule and they argued that the restriction on where they can carry firearms violates their Second Amendment rights, okay? The right to bear arms, as we all know. And initially it went to a federal district court who sided with them and they said, yeah, it's likely that the rule does violate the Constitution. But then the state of Hawaii went to an appeals court and they upheld the law. The basis of their decision was interesting. They said that there was a tradition of prohibiting the carrying of firearms on certain private property without the owner's oral or written consent. And so, therefore, that's why we're siding with the state in this case. Mm. However, it went all the way up to the Supreme Court. And last week, the Supreme Court decided in favour of the gun owners and the Hawaii Firearms Coalition in a 6-3 decision, right? Mm. And in the ruling, okay, that was read out by Justice Samuel Alito, they said the effect of this rule is to impose severe restrictions on the daily activities of residents who have, and this is the important part, who have satisfied the state's rigorous requirements for the issuance of a carry permit. And I think that's, whether you like the law or you don't like the law, I think you've got to say that that interpretation is probably right.
Yeah.
In the sense that it does hobble what the Second Amendment protects, and that is the right of Americans to carry arms for self-defense as they go around their daily business.
Yeah.
And this is just to continue on what Alito is saying.
Even if it's on private property, other people own.
Yeah, publicly accessible private property.
Yes.
So not walking into your house now and saying, I've got a gun here and I'm going to carry it whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
This is restaurants, bars, that kind of thing. So publicly accessible private property.
Yeah, and you mentioned a number of other states that they will, that I assume have similar rules or had similar rules.
Have similar rules and they will probably be affected, but I'm sure that probably what has to happen here is that those states might have to go on a case by case basis and test
it.
Right. I'm not 100% sure, but I'd say that's probably what might need to happen. I am open to correction on that 100%.
Yeah,
legal experts want to text in,
or indeed the states might change it themselves in anticipation of someone taking a case like that.
Indeed.
What's the point of pursuing it. And of course, this is the Supreme Court that has been stacked by Donald Trump. So
yes.
I suppose it's not that unexpected.
Unexpected. And the Trump administration were behind it. They were basically saying that the requirement put an armed permit holder at risk of committing a crime. And indeed, it wasn't a felony. If you were caught doing this, it was a misdemeanor. So you could have gone to prison for anything up to a year or just short of a year, which is misdemeanor in the States, apparently.
Okay.
So, you know, there you go.
Right, so something else that isn't a surprise, you were kind of alerting to this possibility last week. This is the result of the presidential election in Colombia.
Yes, so this is the news that the left-wing candidate in the presidential runoff, Iván Cepeda, has conceded defeat. He conceded defeat last Wednesday in what was a really, really tight race and a really tight runoff, I think not last Sunday, but the Sunday before, okay? So the huge turnout for Colombia, 64%, which was up 6% from the first round.
Mm.
So that meant that there was about 26 million voters involved in total. 420,000 of the votes, or just over 420,000 of the votes, were blank, were invalid. So that's a huge amount.
Yeah.
And when you consider that the gap between the two candidates was just 250,000 votes, you can see how that might be quite frustrating for one or both sides. But anyway, Cepeda decided that he was going to fall on his sword as what he called an act of democratic responsibility, because he didn't want to see the division that had been created during the election becoming worse. And in his acceptance speech, actually, the winner, Abelardo de Espria, he said that people who are on the opposite side of the political spectrum had nothing to worry about. Now, I would say they have a lot to worry about, to be quite honest with you. This guy is a character, I suppose, as his supporters would say. But he's a bit of an oddball in many respects. I'll give you a few examples if I can, right? Mm-hmm. So he's not dissimilar to our old friend at this stage, Nayib Bukele in El Salvador, right? He wants to also build a prison in the middle of the jungle in Colombia. And he wants to stop talks with any of these, you know, guerrillas, dissident guerrillas that haven't, haven't bought into the peace process and that kind of thing. But during the campaign, and this was only back in May, he showed a picture of his bulge to a female journalist in front of an assembled assembly. And he was kind of alluding to the fact that, you know, because of the size of his bulge and his...
I'm assuming this isn't where I keep my gun. This is the bulge bulge.
The love bulge, if you want to call
so
it that. And he was basically saying, this is why people vote for me. And he started shoving, you know, he had a picture of his bulge on his phone, okay, on his camera phone.
Okay.
And he was showing it to a female journalist. And she got very upset, as you can imagine. And he was actually ordered to apologise by a judge on the back of that, right? So he's been a very colourful person for a very long time. So I think we're going to be hearing a lot about him. He's already declared his sort of affection, shall we say, for Donald Trump, who has reciprocated that affection. And endorsed him during the election. So Abelardo de Espria, I think we're going to be hearing quite a bit about him. But it's another leader in South America that has tilted in that right-leaning direction.
Yes.
It tends to go in waves. It's funny the way it works
and
there.
Well, in that part of the world, it was like that decades ago. Yeah. Having said that, though, you know, all this, I'm going to build a big prison in the middle of the jungle and we're going to round up all these people. That's way easier said than done.
Yeah, I don't know if he has the money. That's a point. All right, yeah. And how long will it take him to do? These presidencies in Colombia, they tend to be fairly chaotic and they go fairly quickly before things get done. I mean, the guy who's leaving, who we've spoken about a lot over the years, is Gustavo Petro.
Mm.
And he has always had a major problem with Donald Trump. He was in the White House up just a few months ago, I think, and they were all pallying that kind of thing. But while he was in the States, it was confirmed by US authorities that he wasn't being investigated for drug trafficking. Now, you can fully anticipate that when Abelardo de Espria gets voted in or gets sworn in on August 7th, that there might be some sort of a warrant heading in Gustavo Petro's direction. So don't be surprised to see him in a jumpsuit in Miami at some stage in the future.
That's
scary
quite
for him.
Extraordinary. Yeah. South Korea we're going to go to next. And of course, as we all know, K-pop has taken over the world and it's some serious stalking stuff going on.
Yeah, it's really affecting some people, all right. This is an individual by the name of Jungkook, who I'm sure you're a massive fan of. BTS, K-pop star. And this is in relation to a Brazilian woman who has received a suspended prison term of 1 year. It's been suspended for 2 years for constantly stalking him, really, right? It started back in December of last year when she first visited this young man's home and she was loitering around the property. She was throwing items over the wall. I don't know what kind of items, but I'll leave it to your imagination.
Yeah.
And she stuffed some letters through gaps in his door. Days later, she came back and she visited again and she rang the doorbell no fewer than 133 times. Now, I don't know who was counting, to be honest with you, but that's what they said. An act that the court later said demonstrated an extreme level of obsession. Now, she was eventually arrested on the 13th of December when she tailed a food delivery worker through the side gate of the property. And so they said, OK, this is enough now, 6 days of this. She was released the next day with a warning, told not to approach the property. She did approach the property a few more times And the police eventually said, right, we need enough of this. We have to arrest you and put you in front of prosecutors, which they did in February. And now the decision has been taken to give her a prison sentence of 1 year. And it looks like she's going to be deported as well.
Yeah. Has she travelled from Brazil just to do this?
I'm not sure, to tell you the truth, but I have to say, I wouldn't be surprised if she had. She seemed fairly determined, all right.
Yeah, but these people must be under besieged.
Yeah,
this kind of thing.
It's not the first time this has happened to him. He was in military service. I think all five of them were in military service. That made the headlines over here when they came out of military service. I think they did a massive concert, actually, in Seoul, and millions of people were at it. And so that was in June of last year. And there was a Chinese woman who was in her 30s who was arrested trying to break into his house just a couple of hours after he completed military service. So, you know, it's Beatlemania, South Korean style. It is.
Maybe they need to build a bigger house or move someplace. Right, Zimbabwe we're going to go to next. Now, Jonathan's been telling us about Zimbabwe off and on for weeks now. Is this a coup, essentially? It's one of those, we've decided that the president can stay in situ forever kind of situations.
It's exactly that, which we've mentioned before in Africa. It seems to be a favourite thing of these extending presidential terms in various parts. In this case, it's Zimbabwe, right? So we know that Robert Mugabe was in power from 1980 to 2017, 37 years, and eventually a man by the name of Emmerson Mnangagwa, who's now the president and who's now 83, he's going to be 84 in September, he got rid of him in a fairly tame military coup. But it looks like he's just replaced him, to be honest with you. He's now looking to change the constitution to give himself more time in office, right? So he's going to extend it from 5 years to 7 years, which will mean, given the fact that he won a dodgy election back in 2023, that he'll be in power until 2030, okay? Another 4 or 5 years.
Okay.
So it's quite an extension. But do you know what? I think what's more alarming about this, I think the extending, when they do these things, I think the extending of the terms is always the thing that grabs the headlines.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And they wanted to, because I think what's worse here is the fact that the bill is also there is going to replace direct presidential elections. And instead now, the president is going to be appointed by parliament. I think that's far more worrying.
Yeah.
At least you had the veneer of a presidential election and there was challengers and there was an opposition. But now, this is just set up for ZANU-PF, who are the Mugabe party, to be in power forevermore and just to basically nominate who they want to be president and anoint whoever Mnangagwa wants to be in place after he's gone.
And is the president in Zimbabwe, is it a powerful position? Is it like analogous to an American president? Is it that kind of system?
Oh, yeah, very, very powerful, I would say. It is the most powerful position in Zimbabwe. It's like being king, effectively, in the old term. So he runs the show there.
Yeah.
And, there's, you know, while this whole process, inverted commas, was going on, there was lots of intimidation and they did have a public consultation and they had events. I remember seeing a report about an event in a football stadium where all the people were standing up who were supporting it and they were given, you know, 20 minutes, half an hour to speak about it and talk about how good it was. But the minute an opposition person stood up, they were beaten up, had their phones taken off, all sorts of things done like this. So, it's not good.
Yeah. Does that mean, you know, is Zimbabwe then pushing itself into a situation where it becomes more and more of a pariah state? Or other countries around it, what's their attitude towards Zimbabwe?
I think certainly, I'd say the attitude has probably changed in South Africa, for example. Mm. They're probably more favourable to it. The United States certainly is not a fan of Mnangagwa, who's known as the crocodile, as we've mentioned before. They imposed sanctions on him in 2024 and his wife for corruption. I'd say probably having this kind of attention on the country doesn't do them any favours. I don't know how it's doing economically,
whether it's
recovered from the time of Mugabe, but I can't imagine it's doing any much better than it was before.
Yeah. Okay, finally, we're going to go to the Philippines. And this is kind of disturbing, given that a link between an online game and actual real world violence.
Yeah, so this is a story. involving a school shooting that happened in the Philippines about 10 days ago. It happened in a city called Tacloban, a population of about 250,000 people, so it's small enough, and school shootings don't happen very often in the Philippines. Now, this involved grade 9 children, so they're about 14 and 15 years of age. They went into a school and they killed 3 students and they injured 20 others. So these guys have been arrested and they're being investigated, obviously. But the authorities have now taken the step of temporarily blocking an online game called Gorebox, okay? Now, Gorebox is described on Google, okay, as being a place where you can engage in brutal combat with an extensive arsenal of weapons and explosives. It goes on then and it talks about raw effects of realistic ragdoll physics and an intense gore system that brings dismemberment to life.
Good God.
I mean, this is what's advertised,
yeah.
Okay? And they do say, okay, that there is an over-18s rating on it by the International Age Rating Coalition and that. And so the Philippine Cybercrime Investigation and Coordinating Center have basically issued this ban because they feel that these people were maybe influenced in some capacity by Gorebox because one of the two perpetrators had played it.
Okay. Is that a bit flimsy?
It's fairly flimsy, all right. Yeah. And I think it's authorities looking for an excuse maybe to buy time or, you know, blaming, you know, other things that were going on. Because it appears from other reports that what was actually happening here was that these two kids were being bullied. They decided they'd had enough and they took guns to school and started shooting people.
Okay. Which is, yeah, pretty extreme reaction to being bullied. Right. So the investigation to that is kind of still progressing, for want of a better word.
But already this body, this Philippine Cybercrime Investigation Unit, seem to be backtracking a little bit.
Yeah.
They're sort of saying we're doing it just to make sure that there was no connection and this kind of thing. So they're already, you know, you look at the statements, it seems they're already know that they're not on the right path necessarily.
Because
any studies that have been done apparently would suggest that there's not much of a relationship between these games and actual violence. Now, probably more needs to be done on that, but
yeah. And in the Philippines, as you say, school shootings are extremely rare. But is there an issue with violence in schools in the Philippines?
There has been. Recently, there's been a couple of attacks, apparently. There's been a couple of stabbings that have happened in the build-up to this. I think there was 2, not in the same city, but in other parts of the country. So there appears to be an upsurge in violence. But it has to be said, that's kind of against a backdrop of a major decrease in violence in the Philippines over the last couple of years. A lot of that has to do with Duterte, who's now, of course, in The Hague, in front of the International Criminal Court for the methods, for the reduction of that violence.
Yeah.
Seems to be a little bit of a problem, all right, in some of the schools.
Right, so what should we look out for over the next week or so?
Yeah, I think a few things we're looking out for. This is tomorrow, the Society of St. Pius is going to consecrate 4 new bishops without papal consent. So they're going on there.
Well, that sounds controversial.
Their ongoing split from the church there. Then in the US on Thursday, July the 2nd, they're going to release the employment statistics around that.
Mm.
So who knows, that might be in good time to celebrate the 250th anniversary of American independence, which is, of course, on Saturday.
Yeah.
The same day that over in Iran, they're going to start 3 days of funeral ceremonies for the late Ayatollah, who, of course, was killed by members of the United States military.
I'm sure that's a pure coincidence.
I'm sure it is.
Jonathan, thanks a million for coming into us as ever. Jonathan DeBurka Butler there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.